Book 1. Precious Blood. May 5th, 1867. Month 1, Crocodile. Day 9, Water. Festival Tashkatl, or Drought. This Tresina, or 13-day period, Thipaktle, Crocodile, is ruled by the great earth monster, who floats on the sea of stars. Since this is the first Tresina of the sacred year, these days are governed by a primordial urge to create order out of chaos. These are good days to participate in the community, bad days for solitude. Day Atl, water, is governed by Shewatakawatle, god of fire, a day for purification through subjecting oneself to the ordeal of conflict. Water brings out the scorpion, who must sting its enemies, or else sting itself. It is a good day for battle, a bad day for rest. At worst, the day of holy war. The Lord of Night associated with this day is Tlaloc, the god of rain, lightning, and thunder. He is a fertility god, but also a wrathful deity. He is the ruler of Tlalocan, the fourth heaven. Tlalocan is the place of eternal spring, a paradise of green plants, and the afterlife destination for those who die violently from phenomena associated with water, such as by lightning, drowning, and waterborne diseases. Tlaloc once ruled over the third world, which was destroyed by a fiery deluge. He is the ninth and last Lord of the Night. Chapter 1. They were only a scant day or so over the border, riding horses paid for in lead, when Moro woke with a jaw so puffed it hurt him to talk, swole up like mumps, head clammy with fever. Chess was just strolling back into camp after his traditional morning piss, but the very sight of it brought him up short.
"Hell's wrong with you?" Chess demanded. "Looks like you're storing nuts."
Moro went to shake his head, but thought better of it.
"Hurts," was all he could manage. "Real bad."
They both knew what a toothache this sudden could mean, or cost them. Chess looked at Moro askance, hissed like a cat, then looked away again, cursing.
"Shit fire, Ed. I damn well wanted to stay out of towns, not..."
"I know." More to himself. "And the bitch of it is, I could probably cure you. I only knew how the hell to do it. If anybody'd ever bothered to school me in this damn thing I'm carrying round with me. If gods were anywhere even halfway trustworthy, let alone lying, cheating goddamn men."
As always, anything which sent Chess's thoughts back toward Reverend Rook had immediate repercussions. Moro saw the smaller man's hands, fist spasmodically, knuckles white, and felt something ripple up through the sand-topped earth beneath them both, almost too quick to trace, a shiver echoing from everywhere at once, like their very presence had just started to irk the world's hide, bad enough it was tensing, bracing for imminent trouble, and unsure itself whether it wasn't worth the effort to simply flick 'em clear, like a pair of mosquitoes. Though Chess might seem normal most times, he very much wasn't. He had the Rev dancing naked behind his eyes, whenever he shut 'em, no doubt, enticing him to make for some dark city high on a hill, and that phantom siren's call had to be damn strong indeed, considering how even a non-magical sort like Moro could overhear it on occasion, backwashing through the embarrassingly intimate bond he and Chess had shared ever since fleeing Tampico together. As a result, whenever Chess got riled, it was like being back in proximity with Rook, except worse, since Chess was far more volatile, and always had been. Apt as not to spit up whole poisonous toads, or stamp and bring a flood of amorously seeking bones if he didn't get his way. Shoot spells that dissolved or transformed things on contact. Throw away harsh words like bullets, only to watch them ignite in midair concussive and gunpowdery, horridly random. And yet for all that, Morrow found he still trusted Chess more than he'd ever trusted the Rev, even at his most charming or soft-spoken. Their dalliance continued even now. Chess wasn't one to deprive himself of pleasures, and if it was a choice between fucking or fighting, considering the power disparity involved, Morrow knew which one he'd keep on choosing. One way or the other, Chess and Morrow had drifted with odd swiftness into what Morrow could only deem some variety of demented battlefield camaraderie, a bond only accentuated by Chess's damnable facility in applying himself to a man's tenderest places. Shameless, inventive, with Spartan revelry his favorite type of relief from the barest moment's boredom. And though it was never a taste he'd looked to acquire, the truth was Morrow could no longer, in good conscience, deny how he very definitely had acquired it, as regards to Chess at any rate, if nobody else. Would it stick, though? Morrow wondered. Wondered if Chess, opaque as ever, wondered too. From mere observation, Morrow already knew how he could be a jealous little sumbitch, if and when things got a bit deeper than a passing, "Hey you, come here, I got something for you. Now you give me something too, you big bastard." Even with all they'd done together, however, Morrow didn't exactly know if they'd reached that stage as yet, or if he even wanted them to. "Am I queer now?" he hadn't been able to stop himself from asking Chess, just the night before. To which Chess had shrugged and replied, "Halfway's at best. Why? Worried you'll be dogging after every other man you come across?" "Course not." "Exactly." Chess turned over, stretching, and fit his head to the sweat-slick hollow of Morrow's chest with creepish casualness, for all the world like it had been made to act his pillow. "Then again, I am a special case, by anybody's reckoning. Most men ain't been to hell and back, queer or not. Most ain't had their hearts cut out and ate by a damn god, and lived to tell the tale. So I figure you're safe enough, regarding frolics with anybody else. Less you don't want to be." Morrow snorted. "No fear," he said. "Still," Chess had blithely continued when they were up and dressed the next morning, just as though they hadn't paused to sleep and screw some more in the interim, "it's probably best we keep things light, anyhow. 'Cause much as I hate to admit so, seems my ma was right all along. Love really is a damn disease."
"Going by the Rev, you mean? But what makes you think she even knew what she was on about?"
"And besides that, what makes you think?"
Chess shot him a shrewd look.
"Think what?"
"Nothing."
"That Rook's the only one I'll ever love? Was that it? Why, ex-agent Morrow,
you sad sentimental.
Or was that your clumsy idea of offering an alternative?"
Morrow didn't bother to answer, blushing to his hat-hid ears, and Chess laughed, off and on, throughout the rest of the day, almost from the time they mounted up right to the time they made camp once more. All of which may be proved Morrow either far too lust-struck to think straight, too punch-drunk on hexation overspill to be reliable, simply plain stark crazy, or all three at once. But it had to count for something, didn't it?
"Chess," he made himself say back in the here and now, "it's okay. I'll be fine."
"No, you won't." Chess gave an angry sigh. "Tooth rot'll kill you, fool. Gets in your blood. Saw plenty die that way back in the Lutes Company."
Morrow set his lip mutinous. Tried to, anyhow.
"Look, Chess, I'll be fine. Don't need no damn tooth puller. I'll just..."
Ride it off? Was that what he was going to say? Sounded ridiculous even to him. And it didn't matter anyhow. Having made up his own mind, Chess just rolled right over Morrow's protestations.
"Big man like you, afraid of a pair of grabbers. That's pure foolishness, son. We'll get it looked to. Maybe put some gold in your smile. Now, how'd that be?
Ah, stop trying to bribe me, you damn fancy dancer. Call me son, and you're half my age.
Yeah, there we go. Get mad, goddammit. Act a man.
With a grin. Sides which, I really wanted to bribe you into anything. I could do it a sight more cheaply, and amuse myself while doing so, too.
Morrow couldn't keep himself from flushing at the implication.
Rate your services pretty damn high, don't you?
Sure, but then again, I'm worth it, ain't I?
Morrow couldn't argue with that, literally.
Saddle up, Chess told him. Next shithole's mouth of praise or some such, I seem to recall from the last time the Rev and I rode through here. Should get there round about supper time. And if the Sawbones does his duty, you should be fixed enough to eat it, too.
Chawing down with a raw socket ain't my idea of fun, Morrow muttered, heaving himself haphazardly into the saddle. Man, I wish old Keyes Hosteen was here.
Chess, already seated, tossed his head just the once at their dead friend's name, like he was flicking flies.
Well, he ain't, he replied shortly.
Morrow sighed.
I know. It's just, he had a way of making things go smooth is all.
Not the world's best epitaph, but one he thought Keyes might have appreciated. Was he still in any way able to? Chess shot him another look, this one almost completely unreadable.
Talk to Sat less than some people, that's for sure, he said at last,
and kicked his horse forward, hard as it would go. As only seemed fitting, Mouth of Praise was mainly false fronts, with every house and shop jacked up twice its actual size, with an overhanging facade meant to mask the disrepair within. They rode in slower than Chess usually liked, with what seemed like an inordinate number of eyes on them right from the get-go. Probably didn't help that Morrow was drooping like he'd been shot, or that Chess's coat was brighter than most of the ladies' dresses.
Might be they recognize us, he said.
Chess didn't even bother to look round.
Oh, you think?
Most places, the local barber did what extraction or patch jobs were needed. But here, perhaps as another mark of greatness yet to come, they'd somehow managed to attract an honest-to-goodness certificate holder with university bona fides. His shingle, hung beside the expected red and white pole, read, Currer Glossing, DDS, Painless Process Practiced. Morrow, who'd had two teeth yanked already, doubted the claim on sight, but damn if it wasn't getting difficult to even keep his left eye open. He slid down heavily while Chess tied up their horses, and immediately felt a wave of vertigo, so intense he almost wanted to thank Doc Glossing, a plump little thing, blinking meekly up at him from behind gold-rimmed glasses, just for opening the door.
Gentlemen, Glossing said, you two appear to be in sore need of denticular assistance.
He took one of Morrow's arms, as Chess shrugged himself under the other. Together they managed to wrangle him over the threshold, and laid him down onto a red plush couch that wouldn't have looked amiss back in one of the Frisco whorehouses Chess had grown up in. In similar style, cash changed hands almost immediately, and where Chess had gotten it from, Morrow wasn't quite sure, given they hadn't exactly stopped to rob any banks since leaving Mexico. But he wasn't about to ask. Could be dead leaves dressed up, like in them fairy tales his ma used to tell, or dirt, more likely. One way or the other, deal done. Chess took up a stance near the window watching the street, as Glossing went about his business, moistening two pledgets of cotton with a tincture of aconite, chloroform, alcohol, and morphine, then packing them firmly round the afflicted section of Morrow's gum, where he fixed them in place with a spring-wound clamp. Morrow groaned at the feel, so pathetically it caused Chess's head to whip round, hand on one gun butt.
Can't you do nothing more for him? He demanded. Well now, that has to set a good 5 to 15 minutes in order for the full effect. Ain't too like to set at all, he keeps on squirming like that. So pour a fresh shot of the same down his throat. Let's get the hell on with it.
Okay, Chess,
Morrow broke in. But just at that moment,
Chess Bargadar!
Fuck, Morrow thought. I knew it. The voice came from up the street a ways, brazen clanging, impossibly loud. It fairly seemed to make the storefront's window jump in its frame. Chess swiped the dock's curtains aside, trying for a better view, and got a shotgun blast over the shoulder for his pains, punching a shower of glass onto the surgery's floor.
Shit!
Chess cursed.
That son of a mother!
Chess Pargeter!
The voice repeated, yet louder, and the next bunch of pellets peppered higher, some through Chess's hat brim. Chess cross-drew, firing back blind till he ran dry. At the same time, Morrow reared up, automatically grabbing for his own gun, only to be astonished, make that horrified, by how easily Glossing managed to press him back down to the couch.
Sir! Sirs! The dentist protested. Pargeter, Reverend Rooks, Chess Pargeter?
Not anymore, Morrow felt like telling him, but the tincture was definitely starting to work, in that the general cacophony made his head ring swoonishly. Swallowing, he squared his jaw and managed,
Who is that?
Chess was down on the floor now, reloading his empty guns, chamber by chamber, with fiery little clots of spellwork that dropped from each fingertip in turn.
Can't damn well see, goddammit.
To Glossing,
and as for you, just keep on going. I want my money's worth. I believe I asked you a question, mister.
From the street.
Pargeter!
Chess turned, fixing him with a narrowed green glare, and rose to his full height, which, though nothing much comparatively, gave him a good half inch on Glossing.
Yeah, that's right, Doc. I'm Chess Pargeter. He's Ed Morrow. This is a gun, and so's this. Now I'm just gonna go outside and kill that big bastard. And if I come back in here and find Ed ain't been fixed in the interim, you best believe I will end you. Got that?
The dentist drew himself up in turn, primly.
We take an oath, Mr. Pargeter, the same as any other school of medicine. I aim to honor mine.
Chess shrugged.
Guess we'll see, he replied, and went slamming out the back.
Morrow tried to angle himself so he could see the street, then let loose with a startled yowl, as Glossing grabbed his head by the swollen jaw, moving it firmly back to the vertical.
Quite enough of that, the dentist told him,
adding, kind but strict, like a horsebreaker at work.
I'd rather have had a few more minutes setting time to give you, but this will have to do. Hold as still as you can, Mr. Morrow.
More cold metal wedged his mouth open. Morrow braced himself for agony as the pliers made contact with the bad tooth. But the only thing he felt was the feather-light stroke of soft fingertips on his forehead. A split second later, a warm, fuzzy, gluey feeling took hold, like thick treacle, coating every nerve, the faintest pressure. For all that Morrow knew, the grabbers and brace dug equal deep. Glossing's face above him was a blurred, black, featureless mask against the light.
This ain't natural, Morrow thought stupidly. More like supernatural, which meant hexation. And hexation meant a trap.
Ah, crap.
Chess!
Morrow yelled, or tried to. Least he owed him was a warning, but all that came out was a harsh rasp of breath, a bit too much like a death rattle for comfort. Glossing might have shaken his head, hard to tell at this angle.
Save your strength, Mr. Morrow.
His voice sounded like bubbles bursting in deep water far away. I guarantee my client's painlessness, but you're far from the first to dislike the side effects. Silence really is golden, it seems, especially when fitting a man for gold teeth, though I admit. And here he let his own show,
and a sly flicker of discolored porcelain. They're seldom quite so lucky for me, either. Now, before I forget. He leaned in, twisted and yanked, hard, till something gave with a wrench, snapping away with a dull, concussive string of throbs Morrow was thankful to barely feel. Glossing dropped the tooth into a nearby ceramic bowl, then turned to peer out the window, pliers still in the hand he used to shade his eyes.
You're a hex,
Morrow managed to gargle through a mouthful of blood. Glossing looked back at him with a raised eyebrow, nodded.
Yes, I do apologize for the impacted molar curse, Mr. Morrow, but I couldn't think of a better way to guarantee you'd pay a visit to my poor establishment.
Gazing out the window once more, no point in sending anything similar Mr. Pargeter's way, of course. It'd have simply bounced off and come back in my own direction, no doubt rendered considerably harder for the journey.
Now, let's us just wait and see how my friend is doing.
He appeared not to notice as Morrow, summoning every ounce of effort, pushed himself up on his elbows in order to finally get his head above the windowsill. He spat all down his shirt front, bright red, and squinted. The streets had emptied with the first gunshot, though Morrow thought he could catch the occasional cautious head or pulled low hat brim lurking here and there. In the center of the street, a pale, heavy-set, rag-bearded man in filthy, tattered buckskins snapped the fresh-loaded shotgun in his hands shut and turned slowly in place, his own gaze casting about fruitlessly.
Chess Pargeter!
The man bellowed once more, abruptly, and Morrow felt a cold trickle in his belly. There was something innately wrong with the man's voice, an odd disjunction which added an inhumanly thick echo to his monotonous, repetitive cry, as though he was literally unable to say anything other than Chess's name, to form any other thought, let alone express it aloud. But now the silence broke open again, a barrage of thunderous cracks, rapid as hammer blows. The yelling man staggered, buckskins bursting open in a blood-dust spray, as Chess strode up the street, emptying his revolvers into his back. They ran dry once more. Chess holstered and struck a pose, looking smug.
That's just what happens when you make free with a man's name and you ain't even been introduced, he hollered,
then folded his arms and waited to watch the man fall. Which he didn't. The realization came attached to a sound, strange yet familiar, spurring Morrow to turn his head. It was Glossing, chuckling in his throat, greedy, playful, instantly reminiscent of Rook and Songbird. Songbird with Rook, pulling him down to her level and kissing him hard, sucking magic from him like a damn mosquito. Like it tasted so good she didn't care whether she killed herself doing it, just so long as she got her fix. Chess, back over his shoulder, running headlong to Rook's rescue.
Don't you know nothing about hexes, fool? They can't take just a little.
Morrow Fair felt his balls clench as he watched Glossing raise his free hand, fingers twitching, a puppeteer pulling strings. Thought helpless.
Shit. Move, Chess, move!
Chess saw that the stuff gurgling from the man's exit wounds wasn't blood, but some horrid, blackish goop. A second before the shotgun came up, his eyes widened. With a yelp more of surprise than fear, he dove to one side, not quite fast enough, and spun as the blast caught the barest edge of his shoulder. He howled in pain and hit the ground hard, scrabbling in the earth for something, anything to throw. The gun centered on Chess, and sickness crawled up Morrow's throat as the trigger tightened. In sheer futile defiance, Chess snatched up a handful of grit and hurled it, snarling. Only to see the stones multiply and fracture in midair, become a howling jet of razor-edged shards
flashing from Chess's palm to burst against the gunman thing's front, like the deluge from a perforated water tank. Rotten buckskins and pallid flesh peeled back from the thing's body, sending it staggering backward. The shotgun fell from one disintegrating hand, flipping to discharge again as it hit the ground, right up into its former owner's groin. Stunned, Chess made the mistake of letting his own hand drop, at which point the earth jet instantly ceased, leaving the truth laid bare most awfully. The body beneath those buckskins had never been human, did not even look human now. By the low-slung hips, black moldy fur, and short thick legs, its bottom half seemed mostly bare. The long wavering spine and deep ribs looked like the remains of a powerful bull's, while the arms, scaly and undersized, their gloved-over paws, fingers, actually long nails made for digging, hovering foreshortened up around the creature's belly. A lizard? Armadillo? Only the head bore any resemblance to a human's, though slackly mask-like, and that was spoiled by the weird letters incised, black and smoking, on its white brow. Glossing pressed his fingers to his mouth, looking absurdly dismayed. Then his rabbit eyes tightened. With another subtle gesture, he sent the corpse amalgam lumbering forward, ready and willing to crush by sheer weight what it had failed to shoot dead. But Chess had the measure of his foe now, and this was hardly the first dead thing he and Morrow had dealt with. So as it approached, he dropped below its clumsy swing and spun, planting a spurred heel square in the thing's knee. The rotten joint burst, bones snapping. Gravity took over and brought the thing down to the ground hard. And Morrow's head was abruptly crystal clear, while Glossing was doubled over, clutching his own knee, screaming. Before the dentist could recover, Morrow had already flipped himself off the couch, cursing as he crashed to the floor. The numb spell was still on him, crawling back up his body, even as Glossing regained his senses. He quick-humped toward the door and down the front steps, out into the street with Glossing on his heels, yelling as he did,
"Che, he's a doc! He's a hex! Damn thing's his puppet! Glossing's a hex!"
White pain burst through Morrow's head, blinding him. Abruptly he found himself on his back, insect scrabbling with all four limbs at once. Glossing drew back his boot for another kick, face distorted in a snarl of rage, then buckled once more, grabbing his side as if knifed. Morrow rolled his head, just barely able to glimpse how Chess threw kick after kick into the thing as it twitched feebly on the ground. With each one, Glossing shrieked again, crumpling until he too lay helpless in the dusty street, barely able to watch as Chess dragged the whole huge, stinking mess of his creation over to him by one swollen leg. Kneeling, Chess traced an invisible line from the thing's letter-carved skull through the air till his hand made contact with Glossing's chest. So intent was Chess's gaze that Morrow was fairly certain he wasn't even noticing the small black shotgun pellets steadily working their way from his wounded shoulder, vanishing in tiny puffs of flame before they could even hit the ground. "This," he said to Glossing, hand moving like it was following a rope Morrow couldn't see, "little silver string. That's how you make it dance, huh?" Without waiting for an answer, he rose, then stamped down hard between puppet and puppeteer, like he was snuffing a fuse. Glossing groaned. The dead thing stopped moving. Chess stared at it, sick fascination plain on his face.
"What the hell is that thing, anyway?" he demanded. "What do you even call it?"
Pain and dread had drawn Glossing's face tight. His grim smile made him look like someone else entirely. Again, Morrow was reminded inexorably of both Songbird and Rook.
"He's my friend. The proper word
is Golem. But I call him
Emmett.
As the name echoed thickly in the air, Chess and Morrow both found their eyes snapping all unsummoned to those four alien letters on the monster's skull, caught and held by black power, mouths agape, as the thing suddenly reared back up. Behind the word, a thunderous, brazen sound, like sheeting, shook off stage at the theater, as though each letter had been embossed on the air. Whether the spell was actually so strong it affected them both, or Morrow was just inadvertently sharing Chess's senses again through whatever connection Rook had bound upon them, they could all see it now. A web of black cable strung from Golem to Hex, then leading back from both of them into the far distance, stretching across miles toward
Rook, breathed Chess. That house-sized son of a bitch!
On the floor, Glossing coughed.
I lie down every night, he rasped, with that slunk deep in my dreams, calling me. I rise up every morning, knowing Reverend Rook'll give me all the power I could ever want, if I only sign away my soul and follow it to its conclusion. And the best joke of all is, it isn't even me he wants.
His eyes burned.
It's you.
No, Doc, Chess shook his head. This ain't my doing.
But it is.
Glossing pushed himself up slightly, trembling.
Every hex between here and the Mississippi's been bleeding power like a stuck pig for weeks. Also, your good reverend can bring us to help serve you. He says he'll make us gods, but he's just one more like you, like me. All he wants is food, and I will not be his meal.
Here he flung out a hand, grabbing for Chess's. The power flare between them was so bright, hot, and immediate that Morrow cringed back with a yell, hands over his eyes. He felt the sickening pulling even in his own gut, the nauseating wrench of power being sucked away, and knew it must be 1,000 times worse for those who had power to lose. Chess's startled cry was a shrike's, so full of rage and pain, it made him want to both cringe and weep. Then, fury, red and sizzling, as the blazing stream reversed itself so suddenly that Morrow felt it rush right up into his throat. A gag, a noose, fit to strangle and choke. And saw Chess's eyelids flutter just a tad at the taste of it, hot and fresh, like heart's meat done up sizzling, straight from the spectral grill.
With dread Lady Ishel's voice crooning alongside, an ill refrain from the darkest depths of Morrow's memory.
Jaguar cactus fruit, so flowery, little husbands, so precious, so beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Often as you claim to have been in consort with Rook, Chess told the dentist. Don't seem like you quite got the bulk of the message. I ain't just any hex to be sucked dry and dropped. I'm different.
Glossing gave a bitter laugh.
Oh, you're that all right.
He waved at Emmett one more time, like he couldn't help it. It jerked forward, growling. But Chess just shot again, as if by way of reply, offhand without even looking. The final spell bullet exploded out of Chess's barrel, all bat wings and squid legs, writhing and snapping. It ripped the golem's face right off, revealing a perforated horse's skull, whose long jaws were set with dog's choppers underneath.
Nah, I don't think so, Chess said, 'cause for all you got some fancy tricks indeed,
You still ain't hex enough to mess with me.
Glossing gulped and tried to scuttle, arm flopping hapless, like he'd momentarily forgotten he and Chess were still holding hands. And Chess gave a mean, familiar predator's grin at the sight, gripping so hard his knuckles flared up white, drew in even harder, as though he meant to drink every last drop of the fat little man up through a wry grass straw. It was sad, in its way, for both of them. Chess Pargeter, battle-proven killer of men, reduced to a child stepping on anthills. Doc Glossing, reduced to meat. The dentist hissed, a near squeal, then went all at once a droop, overwhelmed and withering, a popped pig's bladder.
"So powerful," he gasped, giving way. "So strong, and yet you don't know anything. Not a damn thing. Not even..."
An unintelligible mutter followed, resolving itself into,
"Was right about you."
At this, Chess's eyes, already lit up with the surplus, literally snapped and flared.
"Who was? Rook? That deathless bitch of his? Goddamn songbird?"
The man just shook his head, defeated, taking refuge in silence.
"Tell me, shithead. I'll yank your soul out through your eyeballs, see if I don't..."
"Won't get a stitch more from me, Mr. Pargeter. I'm done."
"Oh, you got that right,"
Chess snarled, pulling all the harder, till Glossing's entire plump visage seemed about to cave in.
"Question is, you want the end of it to go quick? Easy? Or anything goddamn but..."
"Chess,"
Morrow said warningly. Too late, Glossing slumped, emptying himself into Chess in one foul gush. When Chess looked up once more, his pupils blazed like lamps, slitted and triangular, a ghostly cat's gaze, touched with hellfire. Across the street, doors were opening. Citizens either stood frozen and staring, or went scattering off to find guns, the law, the nearest preacher equipped for a long-distance exorcism. At the sight, power crackled between each of Chess's 10 spread fingers, so sharp it made even him jump.
"And what are you all looking at?"
he demanded.
"Chess, I said let's go. Let's just... come on, now. Go!"
"We're looking at you, you hex from hell!"
some brave soul yelled meanwhile, before ducking back into the town's one saloon.
"Damn straight, we heard your story, Chess Pargeter. Wrecking decent folks' homes, destroying respectable businesses."
As the only mundane combatant here engaged, Morrow could sympathize with their simple human outrage, even when a few started tossing horse apples along with the abuse.
"Invert! Vandal! For his name shall be called abomination, and his place made desolate. That a jacket or a damn circus rig?"
Above, the clear sky growled, like it was getting hungry. Chess flushed, furiously, jacked up on Glossing stolen juice. His own anger reached out wider, causing the shattered store window glass to run and drip, mercurially refusing to merge with the street's dust around it.
"You motherless bitches!"
he said, the lightning flashing round his palms rising wrist high.
"Dare to quote the damn Bible at me? I've had that from the best, so come on over here and try it to my face, you lily-livered!"
"Chess, for shit's sakes!"
Chess blew out a snarling breath and shook his head.
"Hold on,"
he told Morrow, knitting his still sparking fingers painfully in the bigger man's shoulder. And they were gone, popped out and back into existence in a half second. The town erased, like blown off mist. Nothing but empty rock, scrub, and equally empty overhang of cloudlessness, sun the color of a struck match. Chess stumbled back a pace, then sat down heavily, like he'd been gutted. Moreau collapsed on his side, hands automatically gone to his maimed mouth, only to find the raw hole plugged once more, with a bare rim of new tooth, man-sized, smooth as china plate, poking up, impossibly, through tender flesh. He wondered how long it'd take to grow out fully, and whether keeping himself drunk throughout would help or hinder the process.
"Crap!" Chess exclaimed, suddenly exhausted. "I left the goddamn horses behind."